and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichten. With me today is my guest, Andrew Dukowitz. Andrew, how you doing?
Good, man. Wolves back? Question mark?
Seems like it. Yeah, I mean, we're recording this day after the Wolves beat the Nuggets, 115-95. Incredible game. It's their sixth in a row. I mean, everything you'd want to see from that team, they showed you that. Defense, moving the ball, scoring. Just, again, their first game back in Denver since game seven, and they just took it to the Nuggets. I thought there were portions of the game where they didn't even play all that well. There were sloppy turnovers, turned the ball over 15 times. Like, I thought they left a lot on the table, and they still, especially in the second half, just absolutely took it to the Nuggets. Andrew, your overall impressions on maybe not the most impressive win of the year, but certainly the high point of the Wolves season.
I mean, what was most impressive to me is that, like, look at the first and second quarter, right? Like, Anthony Edwards was kind of bad. Like, he was doing his normal, like, dribble, three-point heave stuff. Like, Rudy Gobert was kind of getting cooked by Gobert in the first quarter. Jaden McDaniels had two quick fouls and got pulled out of the game. But, like, this team just has so many weapons that they can put out there where, like, all right, Ant doesn't have it. Randall, do your bully ball thing. Jaden's out. Okay, Dante, we're going to do our, like, hook screen and three thing for you. Naz Reid was pretty much non-effective most of the game. Didn't matter. They had Nikhil, who was hitting threes. Mike Conley had a good game just running the offense. Like, I mentioned it on a different pod of just at some point in a post game or a practice interview, Chris Finch is going to be able to give like the biggest "I told you so."
He's not going to do that.
He's not going to do it, but he's going to be able to because the entire season he has been on message of this is going to take time. We have eight starters that we need to figure out. Kind of back off, everyone. Let us just figure our stuff out. And, like, they figured it out, and this team looks, I mean, remarkable. Everyone seems bought in. Everyone seems to be clicking on the same gear. And then halftime hits. Anthony Edwards, for whatever reason, figures it out and then comes out, plays the entire third quarter, looks fantastic in the third quarter. Julius is still doing his thing. Rudy starts kind of rebounding to his norm, and they kind of just put the game away. I mean, a cover-to-cover win over the Nuggets is in Denver, in the altitude, as everyone says. Like, that's an impressive win, especially given this Wolves team that has a tendency to have these letdown games sometimes. I don't know. I was overall just really impressed, and, like, every win that they're stacking up now, I can kind of see the vision more and more of. This team is legitimately a top 10 offense, top 10 defensive team that can roll against anyone.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing you said there is that what it looked like last night and really what it's looked like since they've gotten DiVincenzo and Randall back and now Gobert for the past few games is like this is what it was supposed to be or what theoretically it could have been when in the offseason when they made the Cat trade or even before. Like, this is what this team is supposed to look like. And, like, we maybe it'll still cost them that it, I think we are all assumed it would take 20, 30 games to figure all of this out, and it took closer to 40, 50 games. But, like, this is what it was supposed to be. And so I, thinking back to the offseason, like, the bigger picture of this season, in my mind, when they traded Cat, or before they traded Cat, like, the idea was, okay, we're going to run this back. We're, what we did last year is going to stick, and what we need to do is figure out the two-man game with Ant and Cat, figure out a way to get the offense out of 17th, draft Dillingham, that gives us another potential ball handler guard to go up against. Like, that's a big reason they lost to Dallas. And we won't relitigate the Cat trade, but when that happened, I thought, in my mind, I was like, I'm not sure, like, they still have, like, a championship-caliber team, but, like, this is a half step back, but like they still have a very, very good team that could win a playoff series against basically anyone. And in ways, like, the hope was that Randall can provide enough Cat replacement and Dante to add Dante into that, that gives you that extra score without having to rely on a 19-year-old point guard. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when it took them longer to integrate Dante and Randall and those guys didn't quite hit the ground running, I think we all kind of adjusted our expectations of this isn't going to be the same as last year. It's going to take maybe a year plus. Maybe Randall doesn't fit with this roster. And so the goals kind of, instead of it being a long playoff run, the goals kind of shifted to, okay, let's just make the playoffs. Let's get more experience. Maybe you get a matchup you like, you make the second round, but ultimately this isn't going to be what it was last year. And now, and maybe this is an overreaction to a win streak, but now I'm kind of going back on that and thinking about, can this team reach their ceiling that the talent would indicate they have? And is there maybe even more than what last year's teams had, that where the offense kind of held them back? Does this team have a higher ceiling than even last year's team does? What do you think about that? Should we kind of put our expectations of this team back to where it was kind of before the slow start?
So Cat trade went down, right? And I immediately kind of changed from, okay, this team probably isn't at a championship level. It's probably at a win one or two playoff series where it was last season, or it gets kicked out level, even with Ant making a jump, Jaden making a jump. Like, that's kind of where I thought, like, okay, there's still a playoff team. They could still be dangerous, but like, I wouldn't pencil them in as a championship team. Slow start happened. I still kind of just saw them as the same team. Like, I never really got super like, oh man, these guys are terrible. Like, I still, even when they had the slow start, it was like, okay, they're going to get into the playoffs, and I could still see them beating Memphis in a series, but probably not much more than that. Now I'm starting to get higher on them because we're seeing what they didn't have last year. Like, last year, they were a top one defense, or the number one defense, and they were, what, 17th on offense? This year, they've stepped back. They're a number six in defense. They're 10th in offense now. Like, they can score. If Ant is getting double-teamed, Randall can bully ball. If Randall and Ant are having off games, they have actions to run with Dante. If Dante is having an off game, and Ant and Randall are having off games, they still have the old Mike and Rudy pick and roll. Like, they, not even to mention that, like, Naz Reid can do dribble step backs now. Like, they have just added elements to their game where in a playoff series, I feel like it's not as easy to stop them. Where last season it was honestly pretty easy. Like, be super physical with Cat, get him either in his own head or have him start off slow, and then double the crap out of Ant and he'll make mistakes. This year, teams can't do that. And they didn't drop off that drastically defensively. So, I mean, you have it on our behind the cover, you have it on our outline for later in the pod. But I mean, this team plays the next 7 out of 8 games at home. And really the only two games I look at that are tough out of those 8 are 2 against Indiana. I mean, they could go 7-1 over the next 8 games. And then we're talking about a team that could still win 50 games. That's insane. For everything that has happened this season, to look at this team and say they realistically could win 50 games, that's literally insane. But they have a shot. If they take advantage of these next 8, if they go out there, split Indiana, and just take care of business against the bad teams in Orlando, we could be talking about a team that's still threatening for a 3 or 4 seed.
Yeah, and it's going to require some of these teams above them in the standings losing at least a game, which kind of hasn't happened. Golden State and Houston have kind of each won 4 or more in a row. But I agree with you that 50 wins is in play. If they win every, they'll be favored. They have 38 wins. They'll be favored in 12 or more games down the stretch. Yep. Like, thinking about games, assuming health for each team, the games that they won't be favored in would be like at Milwaukee, at Memphis, maybe at Indiana. I'm not even sure about that. And at Denver. Every other game they'll be favored in. Yep. So that gives you, how many games do they have left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. They have 15 games left. 14? 15.
And 11 of them they're going to be favored in. Like, this is a team that we could wake up at the end of the season. They could be the 3 seed and a 50-win team. And people that are just tuning in for the playoffs are going to be like, oh, Wolves are the same as last year.
Yeah.
Like, for all of the drama, for all of the struggles, for all of everything.
Now, what
they are still dangerous.
They've done it much better of late, but they kind of, I felt as somewhat similar to this back in the start of February when they had another 5-game homestand.
Yep.
It was a similar, they had like three tanking teams, a good team and a mediocre team, and they went 3-2 with a loss to the Wizards. And so now they were injured during that time, so it's completely different, but it's a similar situation now where, to me, just looking at this 5-game homestand where it's Orlando, Utah, Indiana, and 2 New Orleans, that is, you're going to be favoring all, like, that should be 4-1 minimum.
Yep. Minimum.
And if you want, like you said, if you want a home playoff series, which I'm still not sure is, like, I just think Memphis is going to, it's going to require the Lakers to start really losing or Memphis to really start losing some games here. But if you want a home playoff series or to maybe even to get out of the play-in, you're going to have to go 4-1, 5-0. And like you said, like, then it's like you get one game, one tough game in Indiana, and then you're right back to 2 home games against beatable teams.
I mean, Memphis, I was looking up their schedule last night. They have a tough schedule to close. I don't think the Lakers are, I agree with you. Like, I think the Lakers are probably locked into the top three. I think Denver's probably locked into the top three just with how they take care of business. And, like, realistically, I think we can say, like, Oklahoma City is probably the one seed.
Oh, for sure.
But, like,
the Lakers, though, I'm not sure how much LeBron is going to play the rest of this regular season. They have a really tough schedule. They have a ton of games left. Not to say that, like, them dropping below the Wolves is necessarily likely,
mm-hmm.
but, like, I do think that they're the 4 seed right now. I doubt they'll get into the top three just because, and I'm not sure they're terribly incentivized too.
Yeah.
So
I just look at the Grizzlies and Jaw's been playing about 2 out of every 3 games, which it is what it is at this point with his play style, with how he is, with how they need to protect him. Like, that's just the reality of Ja Morant. I could see them dropping. I could see Houston, even though Houston has a pretty easy schedule to close, I could see Houston dropping, and Golden State has a much harder schedule than Minnesota, and, like, Curry's been banged up this year. Jimmy, at some point, you got to figure is going to do, you know, the Jimmy Butler, what, General Soreness is his nickname? I mean, at some point, like, those things are going to happen. I think, to me, it just depends most on, like you said, can the Wolves just take care of business? Because, I mean, we were talking about it before we recorded. They dropped a game to Washington where Kyle Kuzma went off. They have been known to not wake up for these games. I think my only hope for that is Julius Randle at least seems to be, like, he's a professional, right? Like, I think Julius Randle, even if he's not motivated, is going to come in, bully people around, and score 20. So on the nights where maybe Ant isn't in Ant mode, or Jaden comes in and isn't quite in, you know, as motivated, which both of them have talked about, that they just sometimes come into games and don't have an edge. Like, they do have that Julius Randle piece to fall back on, which I think that's, to me, that's probably the biggest story of the year, is just Julius Randle's been a dude that his entire career is kind of an ISO ball, super high usage, like, I don't want to say selfish player, because I think Julius Randle's is, like, a really good human being, but, like, his play style could be labeled as selfish. And, I mean, really, since January, he has been awesome. Like, he's been great at finding assists, his turnover rates are down, he's, like, setting himself up differently in the offense. Like, he looks completely bought in.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. That's been the biggest part of the season. Quickly to wrap up the kind of what we were talking about, I think what is disappointing is that even if we acknowledge like the slow starts or slow start to the season with the reintegration and how the injuries, how having all the injuries all at once kind of was bad, it just does kind of stink that like the two losses early in the season to Portland or whatever other crappy loss they've had, if they just had like two more wins, they'd be like locked into a top six and like the two seed would be fairly attainable. And I'm going to guess, well, I still think like maybe not two seed, but like they, if they, it's still within their grasp to get whatever out of the play-in. It does feel like that is going to kind of hold them back a couple seed lines, unfortunately. But yeah, to go to your point, and I think we can kind of reorder our outline here a little bit, is Chris Finch clearly deserves a ton of credit for this recent stretch. And I said this early in the week that I think you can say that he deserves a ton of credit, and also point out that early in the season, he was not doing a good job with this certain stuff. And I think people are so, I also said this, like people are so unwilling to like, if a player has a bad game, people are more than willing to like say that's a bad game, but doesn't necessarily reflect on them as a player. And even like a bad season can have that. And I think coaching is the same thing. To a lesser, it's less variable. Obviously, it's not like a missing a wide open three, you shrug your shoulders at it. But like coaches can have bad stretches, especially when they get put in tough spots. Like I would argue Chris Finch was right before training camp. But also he's done such a good job. And Julius Randle's a perfect point. They clearly believed, Finch and probably the front office too, but Finch clearly believed that Randle could do this. That was their belief the whole time. And it reminds me of when they traded for Gobert, where obviously after the first season, it was like people were wondering like this clearly doesn't work. And they clearly did. They clearly thought the Towns and Gobert pairing was going to work. And it wasn't just about whatever other reason that people thought they'd made the good. They thought they could make this work. And it did. It took a year. It took a trade of D'Lo to make it work. And I think this is a similar situation where it didn't take a trade. It didn't take a full season, but now it's working. And it's not to say there won't be a game where Randle has a bunch of crappy turnovers and doesn't play well and whatever, but it's more about like he is moving the ball so much better while still keeping doing the bully ball stuff, still doing the assists off of those. And like that's been the biggest thing because it makes me wonder if like they can get him playing how they needed Cat to. Where without the cliche straight voltage or whatever that Randle obviously doesn't have inherent in his play style. And like what I said in the, well, while Randle's clearly like less talented of a player than the Cat, I do wonder if they're maximizing like his fit better than Cat was.
I think you're like, one, I'll say Chris Finch at the beginning of the year, like when he had bad coaching games, he at least, like, his reasoning makes sense, right? Like, Mike Conley had started the season, like, poor.
There were
like
times Mike Conley, where I don't think it made sense. But in a big picture sense, I agree with you.
Right. Like, Mike Conley started off the season poor. Mike Conley, to this day, is still having the worst professional season of his career. Like, points per game, minutes per game, like, everything is down. But, like, game 12 of the season, you probably still have to close with Mike Conley. Like his track record, yes, he was trending down, but like to Mike Conley, for out of respect for him, like Chris Finch probably has to close with him. And like because he did that, I think Mike Conley's still bought into this point, even though he's playing 18, 20 minutes a game. Like Julius Randle, there was a lot of games where it was like, why are you closing with Julius? It's because at game 70, Julius Randle's going to be bought in because he knows his coach believes him. Like, I think Chris Finch's superpower is getting players to buy in to, like, him as a person. And everyone on this roster, like, raves about Rob Dillingham isn't playing at all and still is, like, Chris Finch is amazing. Like, Anthony Edwards loves the guy. Nikhil raves about him. Nas is coming off the bench as like a guy that would start on 25 different teams. Loves Chris Finch. Like,
probably more than that.
honestly, it might be 29 teams, but like, it's one of those things where like Chris Finch just has this innate ability to get people to buy into him as a person and believe. And we're seeing that now where like, if you took this Julius Randle and showed film of his last 11 games to New York fans last year, they'd be like, why the hell wasn't Julius Randle doing this stuff with Brunson? Like, why wasn't Julius Randle like playing this hard on defense with us? And I think the, like, yes, he's in a contract year and all of that stuff, but like Julius Randle was extension eligible last year. Like, it's not, I just don't buy that as much of a motive because he could have gotten an extension last year. There's no like disadvantage to him playing extra hard last year. I honestly think it's just Chris Finch. I think he just has this way with people of making them click into this other gear.
Yeah. And Randall's probably a lot healthier than, obviously, he literally got hurt with the Knicks.
Yeah. The shoulder injury. Yeah.
Right. And I do think it wasn't 100% until now or whenever the last week when he returned. It's kind of funny. Everyone that has gotten like basically they should trade or fire blank is now starting to play better. And like for me, that was always like my thing was just like, yeah, there's maybe structural things wrong with this team, but like, can we at least get people playing well before we like, so much of the issues was just like people got to play well. And so now Randle, who obviously has gotten a ton of crap online, there was stretch of the season where McDaniels wasn't playing well. And he's been one of their best players, probably their best non-Ant player of the past month or so. Mike Conley clearly is just playing better. I agree. Like, I still kind of think Dante should start, but I'm not mad about what they're doing right now. He's playing only like 20 minutes a game. And honestly, like, yeah, they didn't even get much from Nas. Like, that's the opposite where like, there's so much more from Nas. Like during this win streak, we haven't even gotten Ants played well, obviously, but like there has not been a
50 bomb.
No, there hasn't been the need for like a supernova Ant game either. Like that ceiling is still there. There's still so much more of this team. And obviously all 8 players are never going to have the greatest game in their career in the same game, but yeah, it's been impressive what Chris Finch has been able to do, but ultimately like they've had good stretches at different points this year. Like this is not even their, like they had a 5-game winning streak earlier in the year. They've had, every time it seems like they've had something, a stretch like this, they've gone out and had a poor performance. And now The key is, like, I'm very interested to see what this homestand looks like. You can't be dropping, like, these New Orleans games. You can't, I mean, if Orlando's not terrible, but, like, that's just, Orlando should not be able to score enough points against this Wolves team. They haven't really been able to score enough points against anyone this year. I'm really interested to see what they come out and do, because certainly if they go 5-0, I mean, if they do that, but, like, even if they go 4-1, like, here we go. Everything is still on the table for this team.
4-1, you're 9-1 in the last 10 at that point. Or no, you'd be, 10-1 in the last 11? You look at the Randle games, I mean, it's an 11-0 win streak with Randle right now. If you go another 4-1, I think to me, like, again, like 4-1 is the goal. I look at like the whole 8-game thing because I want to include the Indiana games in there. Like 6-2, 7-1. Should be the goal. Like that should be what they have penciled. And realistically, like this team should steal one game against Indiana and they should beat the brakes off of everybody else. Like you said, Orlando shouldn't be able to score. Even Indiana, like if you look at Indiana's offense where it's Tyrese Haliburton kind of running the show, Siakam. I mean, they have McDaniels for Siakam and they have 4 wing guys to throw at Haliburton. Like that is not a friendly matchup for the Pacers. It's to me, I think the other part of this team is just over the end of this season, what I really want to see is just, I want to see another like supernova ant game. I want to see like Randall just continue this. And then the other thing is like, I really want to see Naz Reid just consistently score 15. Like Naz Reid kind of over his career has either been really, really good in games or pretty bad. And there's no in between. And in a playoff run, like Naz Reid can steal you a game, but you need him to steal you a game and then just play well the other four, five, six games in the series. Because this team's set up where like Julius Randle can probably win you a game by himself if he needs to. Ant's probably good for a game and a half. Naz might be able to steal you one. Like they just need their role players to kind of be consistent. And for Naz, that's what I'm looking for the most out of him. It's just finishing the season. Can we just get 12 to 18 points a game every single game without these like 1-for-9 checks out on defense, looks really frustrated days.
Yeah, and one thing that's interesting about the schedule is while it's certainly good that they have an easy schedule and it's going to lead to wins, as we've already kind of seen it lead to wins. They've had they went on a 6-game winning streak with only like one quality win, but it kind of in a way stinks. Like I don't like matchup wise, there is so. Like absolutely zero to go off of in the regular season in a matchup thinking about like Oklahoma City or the Lakers. Like think the four Oklahoma City games, the only one you could probably even take away anything from is the New Year's Eve one. But otherwise they played the three Oklahoma, even through wins, like they played OKC without all their guys. I don't like, there's not really much to take away other than like they took the ball out of Shea's hand that one game. There's not much to go off of. Like, the Lakers, they only played them once with Luka and they lost and the Wolves didn't have a bunch of their guys. Like the two wins they have over the Lakers, like they were, those mean just nothing. So it'll be like, they don't really, they'll have another shot at Denver. Like, but I think we've already seen, even if they lose that game in April, like we've seen that that's probably an advantage for the Wolves. And then the only game that like, from like a potential playoff series like preview standpoint would be a game at Memphis in the third to last game of the season. And there's a half decent shot Memphis is locked into whatever seed and they just go, yeah, we're not playing guys that night or maybe vice versa. Like, I don't know, like who knows if that game even gives you anything. So like maybe that doesn't even matter because like the Phoenix regular season series last year didn't mean crap. So, and I'm sure like if the Wolves do get matched up with Denver, that'll probably be something I say. It's like, yeah, they do seem to match up well, but like Phoenix thought they matched up well with the Wolves and that didn't go well. So not sure it matters.
Let me ask you.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the top like five teams, like let's go top five teams, like which of those teams would you say like objectively is just better than the Wolves? Like Oklahoma City, I think is objectively better than the Wolves. I don't want to mess with them. Memphis, I don't think they're that far off. Denver, I don't think they're that far off. The Lakers, I think are objectively better than the Wolves. Like Lakers at full strength, terrifying. But then like Golden State, I don't think they're objectively better than the Wolves. Houston, I don't think is better. Like the Wolves are gonna have a chance to make a deep run.
Let me reframe your question because there's like, I agree with you. Oklahoma City is the only team that for sure is better than them. But like from a regular season standpoint, Memphis is 1,000% better than they are. And from a regular season standpoint, the Wolves are better than the Lakers. I don't care what the records are. It's not like that is not a good regular season team. The fact that they're 40-23 is an abomination. Like they have, like, I don't know, like, look at their point differential. They're not that good of a team. It does now with Luka, it's totally different. And as a playoff team, it's totally different. But so there's that difference. But, like, also, the Lakers don't have a center. Maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe that I do think that, like, that is going to cause issues. I'm like, their rebounding's going to be really bad. They've gotten good minutes out of Jackson Hayes. I just, that, if the Wolves play the Lakers, I think they're going to play that guy right off the floor. I don't think so. Maybe they have like LeBron at center. I don't know that the Lakers matchup would be very interesting. But like to your point, other than Oklahoma City, there isn't a team that they match up with where I go. Like if they're in the East, I'd be like, yeah, Cleveland and Boston. This is like I love the way the Wolves are playing, but that's an uphill battle. I don't like that. That they're if they force whatever game, that's a solid outcome. Even maybe I've always kind of been down on Oklahoma City, and they've obviously as a playoff team, like Oklahoma City regular season team is the best team in the league. I think they're they just beat Boston.
I think as a playoff Oklahoma team, City... I'm still
just a little worried about them because, like, I just think about how much more the Wolves are playoff tested than that team. You like Ant has more playoff experience than pretty much ever. They have Dante's been to multiple conference finals. Is that yes?
Won a ring,
right? Rudy's been to multiple conference finals. Mike's 1,000 years old. Like, and who like Shea and Dort have their most playoff performances. I kind of think that matters, and maybe it won't because they're 54-12.
I mean, I think the Thunder have, like you said, they are an awesome regular season team. I worry when the playoffs start, is it going to be kind of the Harden effect with Shea? Which, like, I'll preface this by saying, like, Shea does not shoot 14 free throws a game. He shoots 14 free throws some games, but I think he averages only like 8 or 9. I haven't looked it up.
The
in a foul while,
merchant
like,
thing is slightly overrated. It's not Embiid.
Right.
It's not even like Austin Reeves. There are certainly calls that he gets that are frustrating to me, but I agree with you that it's not to the extent of even like Harden back in the day. His free throws, while like everyone does, will take a slight hit in the playoffs. It's not going to be this chasm.
So to me, it's like, okay, if his free throws go from like 8.5 to 6 and the offense slows down, what else do they really have? Like J-Dub, I love him. Like, I think he is a bona fide all-star in this league. He's a good second option, but is he that much better as a second scoring option than Randall? Chet is completely unproven. Hartenstein's fine, but not like a supernova offensive option. Alex Caruso isn't really a huge offensive option. Dort isn't really an offensive guy. Cason Wallace is fine. But like this team, I think once the playoff starts and the game slows down and spacing gets tight and Shea is getting a couple less fouls a game, I could see them really struggling or at least getting in their own head of like, what do we do? I mean, Dagnall's also not like a super experienced playoff coach like some of these teams
that's
have.
That's one aspect I'm not necessarily worried about. That guy just seems awesome.
He's genuinely like the funniest, like one of the funniest dudes in the league. But like, so I still think if the Wolves get the 8 seed and they have to play the Thunder, I'd take the Thunder and it would be like, man, this is kind of a bummer. Every other seed, the Wolves have a puncher's chance. I'm just a little bit higher on the Lakers because, like, I just don't know how you stop Luka, LeBron. Like, that.
Oh, for sure.
Anything you throw at them defensively, they're going to figure out in two plays. Like, it's two basketball geniuses, and I just don't know how you stop that. Like,
here's my thing with the Lakers, and I'm willing for this to come off as sour grapes or lame or whatever. If I was confident that the refs were going to call the game properly, I would be incredibly optimistic about the Wolves' chances against specifically this version of the Lakers. Next year, the Lakers are going to be an absolute monster. They're going to, like, the roster issues they have are so incredibly fixable that they're going to be just fantastic. I think there's going to be a little bit. Here's what I do not think the Lakers are going to make the finals. And why I say that is I just think the trade, the mental stuff with the trade with Luka, I think it's just going to hold him back just a little bit. And he'll get through that in the offseason when he has time to just fix it. Luka's going to have an MVP caliber season next year. They're not going to have to rely on LeBron like at all. Like they're going to be, before next season even starts, I will pick them maybe to come out of the West next year. obviously OKC has 1,000 picks and they could trade for who the heck knows.
To like our point though is the rest of the teams, Grizzlies, Nuggets, Rockets, Warriors, I mean, even if they're in the play-ins, Clippers, Kings, Mavericks, like none of those teams I think the Wolves are afraid of, and none of those teams I think the Wolves like I think I would probably pick the Wolves in every one of those series. Like Grizzlies, yes, they have this mental thing with the Wolves, but like the Grizzlies have the same issue as the Thunders. Like they have Ja Morant, who is all world, but then once you get to their second and third options, like Desmond Bane's fine, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s fine. Like he's been having a good offensive season.
He's been really good this year. He's been their best player this year, probably. Not even probably, he has been.
I still wouldn't. It still would be hard for me to sit there and be like, Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to win playoff games. Like, I think he's a fixable.
It's a good matchup.
A fixable problem.
It's a good matchup for Rudy. I think, like, that'd be their big thing with Memphis is that Rudy, they'd need a really good Rudy series. He'd guard Jackson, who, let me just look up his 3-point shooter. He shoots threes, but if the Memphis offense ends up with a triple J three, you're probably fine with it. 36.5% at solid attempts. So he's having a pretty good shooting season, but still you're not necessarily, but, and like Ja coming downhill, which he does he's slightly different play style, than he was in that series. The Wolves faced him, but like, that's a good matchup for Rudy. Denver to me is like
the Rudy Denver. Denver's the best team about it again. Like
Denver's the best team shy of OKC, but like obviously we've seen the matchup. I think Houston just doesn't have, and I don't think it matters for them. Like they've had such a, like they went from a tanking team to a very solid playoff team. Like good for them. Like I don't even think it matters that they're going to be overmatched in the playoffs. And then the Warriors are solid, and also I'm not even sure it's worth discussing. Like those aren't going to be a playoff matchup just based on the seeding. So.
Well, and the, like those teams too, like Houston and the Warriors, the Wolves match up incredibly well against. Like, and again, that's why like Memphis and the Thunder, like the Wolves have so many options to throw at Ja and Shea that other teams just don't have. Again, objectively, I'd say Thunder is that team, but every other team, like, it's hard for me not to sit here and be like, the Wolves are going to have a real puncher's chance. Now, because I know we're running to the end here, but like, just to reiterate, my thing is I think they can win a playoff round over the next 8 games. If they go 7-1, I will change my opinion from they can win a playoff round to they can win multiple. And if it looks good enough, like they might be able to win. I mean, hot teams going into the playoffs do this type of stuff.
I'll just say it. The path to winning the West is there. Is it likely? Yep. No. But I don't know. Google, I mean, you know, if you can do the math yourself, do it. Google percentage chance of 3 heads in a row. There is your chance to me. And maybe you white, maybe you round that down. It's 12.5%. Round that down to 10%. To me, that's your shot. And that's to what they said when they made the Cat trade was, you got to just keep getting bites of that apple and keep putting playoff teams together. So it's like, it's a good example, like grab your 10% and run with it. Last year, coming into the playoffs, what I would have probably said a little bit higher than that, but like that's your shot. And to me, that's the, before this recent stretch, I've just like, my big thing is get Anthony Edwards as much playoff reps as possible. That was the biggest thing from last year. I think they kind of hit a ceiling last year. I don't think that team had finals with, like, I think if they win that Dallas series, which they weren't particularly close to doing, that Boston would have beat them the same way they beat Dallas. I think Boston would be a terrible matchup for the Wolves. Probably still are, to be honest. And so I agree with you that I think they would be slight underdogs against pretty much everyone that they'd face. Like, but it's like a 45% thing. And So you just get in the playoffs. Like, to me, you can't be the 8 seed. The minute you're facing OKC in the first round, while I talk about like their potential downsides, like you just got to get into the main part of the playoffs. And I do think, while I say that they have a chance to make the finals, I'm probably overrating some of the recent stretch. Like, if we want to talk about if they do end up getting, if they do end up winning in the or losing the first round, which I would put it at like a 50-50 thing at this point, what it looks like is they still need to figure out, while the offense has been fantastic of late, I still worry, especially in the playoffs, the three-man pairing of McDaniels, Randall, and Gobert, offensively, I just still don't think it works. And so are they going to have the willingness to not play one of those three guys? And to be honest, it's not going to be Jaden. So it's like, who is not, are you going to be willing to play Nas over one of, and this is specifically down the stretch of games, because they can, the rotations, they can, like, that'll be fine. But like down the stretch of games, are you going to be willing to play Nas or play small with Dante and Mike together? Probably just isn't great with Ant, but like, are you going to be willing to play away from, those three starters? And what's been good about this last stretch, as they've been avoiding even not having to come up, which has been such an issue. They probably still lead in clutch games, but like, just finally they've been like, instead of taking a 10-point lead and having it be 5 points on the stretch, they've pushed it to 15, so you don't have to worry about the late in game stuff.
So to address that first, I think at this point, winning solves everything. And I think if they're in the clutch time now versus game 20, it's a lot easier to be like, hey, Rudy, we got to win this game. Sit on the bench. And I think he's a lot more open to it when they're winning than when they're losing. Because, like, Rudy's a super prideful guy. And we all know, like, it's Rudy that's going to be the odd man up. Like, Randall's too important with ball movement, spacing. Like,
I think it depends on the matchup.
Yeah, there are some where, like, Randall is probably, Nas is probably the odd man out sometimes too, but, like, I think the majority will be Rudy having to sacrifice. The other issue I see with this team offensively is, how can they rein in clutch time Ant? Because we all know he goes rogue. We all know Chris Finch goes into the huddle, draws up the most miraculous play that's ever been drawn up on a clipboard. It gets inbounded to Ant, and he goes, nah, fuck that. I'm just going to go do Ant stuff. Like, how do they rein that in? Because we have seen that single-handedly tank games. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, he's done that and won a couple games. Just the bad shots he gets have gone in, too. So
right. And I think that's the hardest conversation that they need to have, like, going into the playoffs. And I think that's also something that teams are probably gonna game plan for, of like, it's a 5-point game, we have the lead, let's force the ball into Ant's hand because he's gonna dribble twice between his legs, step to the left and shoot a three.
Yep.
And if it goes in, good job Ant, but that's a 32% make shot. Like,
yeah,
and Ant's gonna take it every time.
Specifically thinking back to last year, where I don't think the clutch time stuff really was an issue for Ant. And so I do wonder, in the playoffs, does that change a little bit? The Phoenix game 4, I remember the awesome dunk he had at the end of the game that more or less sealed it. That was, could have taken a step back there, but went right to the rim and dunked it. I do think, thinking about maybe McDaniels, Randall, and Gobert can work. It can't work with Mike, and it's not a Mike specific thing, but you need just as much shooting as possible if you're not going to play Nas. And so if you have Dante in there, and so your two guards in there are basically two of the best 3-point shooters of the entire league, Ant and Dante, then you can still, and McDaniels and Randall are not non-shooters, they're just streaky shooters that both of them, ultimately defenses are probably going to just, If you're giving up one thing, it's going to be that. And so if you have Ant and Dante in there, that can mitigate the other non-shooting stuff better. So like that, it's just like ultimately the starters late in a clutch game, I still don't think work. And so they're not going to have many clutch games the rest of the year. They in theory shouldn't. And so I'm just very curious when and if they do have those clutch games, are they willing to, and maybe there's games where like the Miami game, they went with the starters as far as I remember and it worked out fine. Obviously there was the late whatever comeback, but like,
I completely agree with you though. Like, yeah. Their starting five, I think, is a good starting five. Like, it's defense heavy. Mike is a good, like, tone setter for games. It's only out there for 5 or 6 minutes, and then it completely changes. That is not a good closing lineup, though. Like, Mike is just at this point in his career, he's a corner 3-point shooter and a pick and roll lob guy with Ruby, and that's kind of it.
And my thing has been kind of the entire year, and this opinion has looked better now and worse recently when they were just, it seemed like every game they were going down 10 points in the first quarter, was I don't really care what the starting lineup is.
Yep.
Just, it's more about mid-game rotations and who closes. And honestly, they've been early in the season that looked bad because they were giving up big leads and they were still closing with that lineup.
Yep.
And so now I still don't, especially now that the Nuggets game, they took an 8-point lead early. Like, if they can do that and not just the starting lineup being like their worst lineup, I don't mind that their starters are not the best lineup, as long as it's gone from toxic to just fine, which is kind of the requirement.
If they, to your point, they need to close with their best lineup every night. And some nights that's going to be Nikhil at the point guard. Some nights that's going to be Dante at the point guard. Some nights that's going to be Rudy Nas. Some nights that's going to be Randall Nas. I think the only two guys you can like pen into the closing lineup is Ant Jaden. And then Chris Finch has 6 starters to play with.
And Jaden's only a recent addition to that list, by the way. Like, that was not true for Jaden.
Beginning of the year, he got benched for Nah a couple games. Like, Jaden's just kind of, it's funny because like, I think we get spoiled because we look at Ant, right? And Ant went from 19-year-old kid to megastar. And Jaden McDaniels is just kind of progressing how a normal, solid NBA player progresses. But it's just so different to Ant that it's like, we're sitting there going like, why isn't Jaden scoring 25 yet? And it's like, well, because Jaden's not going to score 25 until he's 28 years old, if at all.
Yeah. And they have, last postseason they did, because I felt like I was saying the same thing last year, where it was like, there's no more, it, like, this is a big boy team. We're a title contender. We have to play our best lineups. Relationships not be damned, but like, if you get benched, it can't be a thing. And they did that. They sat Cat in games. They sat Rand. Like, I'm thinking game 7, they sat Cat down after he was their best player for the first 3 quarters. They sat him on the bench for a lot of that fourth quarter. They played Nas, and I believe Rudy fouled out. They brought Cat back in because they didn't have anyone left, basically. And he has the game-sealing putback dunk.
Yep.
And so did Nas, also had a game-sealing putback dunk. Both of those guys who Nas wasn't starting and Cat got benched. Both of those guys had big moments in that game. And so that's got to be the same thing. If the matchup doesn't call for Randall for whatever reason and they got to play someone else, same with Rudy, same with Mike. Less concerned about Mike having issues with that Mike type sucks. Of stuff. But like, or even like if Dante doesn't close, or like, it just can't become an issue. And it probably did earlier in the year. I don't know. They never really, I don't remember a specific benching of Randall that caused issues necessarily, but certainly him being frustrated with everything going on was an issue at times. And that's, championship teams don't do that. Maybe championship teams don't need to cycle through lineups, like Boston did last year to a certain extent, although Kristaps wasn't healthy enough to really ever sit anyone long enough or whatever. But you talk about, or national guys, the disease of me after a title, Like, you can't have that before the title. You just, like, it's got to be about trying to win and not worrying about the lineups.
It's weird to say, but there's not really anyone I'm looking at on this team now that I'm worried about. Like, I think game 35, Rudy's probably pissed if he's getting benched in the... I mean, he never says anything publicly. He's always super polite. So this is just me speculating. But, like,
he did
he's a
say,
very proud man.
He did say, respectfully, during one game, he's like, yeah, Finch sat me. I disagreed, but he's the coach, blah, 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 blah. Which,
right.
Completely... Right. Completely fine to have that opinion.
Like, I think game 35, Rudy is like that. I think game 35, Randall's like that. I don't worry about Dante at all. I don't worry about Nikhil at all. I don't worry about Mike at all. Ant and Jaden, they're going to be playing. Nas, I don't worry about. And, like, I think at this point in the season, like, Rudy and Randall both get it. Like,
I think
this team is hitting the right stride. Like, on a buy-in level and like a production level at the right time.
Without knowing for sure, I can think of multiple players that potentially had issues with their minutes at some point this season.
Yep.
Certainly Randall. I think Dante at times has been frustrated with him not starting or not getting enough minutes or not getting like a long enough stretch. Like, there's a difference between playing 25 minutes, 5 minutes at a time and like 12 minutes at a time or whatever. Mike probably has not, but like Rudy. So that's like Rudy, Julius, and Dante probably have, and maybe even Nikhil, although I doubt he would voice that to anyone just because
right.
He's that type of guy. But yeah, it's like
but
at
like,
this point in the season
right now, they all seem bought into where I don't think they care. Like, I agree with you. Like, Dante at the beginning of the year kind of looked most of the time. Randall, I remember one time he got benched in the fourth quarter and like left the bench before the game was over. Like, that's a pretty clear sign he was pissed. But like, winning solves everything. And when you're winning and you're rolling into the playoffs, like, I think if it's game three against Memphis and Chris Finch is like, Julius, I got to go Nas, he's going off. I don't think Julius is leaving the bench early and like pissed.
No, I think they've done a good job kind of figuring that out. And I don't think it's a coincidence that like two of the guys that have been frustrated their minutes are the two guys they got for Cat back from New York. Is that I just think it's been an adjustment for them. And
Yeah. Maybe
in the offseason we can criticize the team or them or whatever for not figuring that out sooner and maybe it'll cost them. But putting that aside for now, like, they've clearly figured that out and let's hope that that continues. Just kind of looking forward ahead like we've already kind of done. They got five straight games at home and one road game and then two more back at home. It's such a big opportunity. Then they go on the road for like their only tough stretch, which even that tough stretch includes two tanking teams out east. Like,
yep.
They have the easiest schedule in the West. And I think people hear that and they're like, well, it's good, but whatever. It's by a lot.
Yeah.
So, the only other two teams that play a schedule of like the average opponent is below 500 are not teams standing wise the Wolves are concerned with, OKC and Dallas. I mean, I don't think we should be concerned about Dallas standings wise or unfortunately anything wise. Houston plays a dead
over.
Even schedule. Golden State above 500 and then Memphis, Clippers, Lakers, Kings, Suns all play just a hellish schedule. And the other thing is the Wolves had tied for the fewest games remaining left so that they have the most off days left. They only have two back-to-backs, one of which is both games at home. The other is in Brooklyn, where Brooklyn is also on a back-to-back. So they don't really have like a rest disadvantage game left in the schedule. I mean, the back-to-back at home technically is, but I'm not really worried about a home back-to-back in the middle of a five-game homestand, to be honest. Like, the schedule sets up perfectly. They play, the average opponent has a 429 win percentage. If I scroll, that's worse than the Spurs. Obviously, the Spurs don't have Wemby, so they probably play worse than, that's, what's a good East comparison? That's like the Bulls.
Yeah.
The average opponent right now for the Wolves is the Bulls. And so if you like look at if you're chasing down Golden State or even just like think about Sacramento below them, Sacramento's average opponent is like the Pistons or the Wolves or the Clippers. Like that, it's just such a different, and the Warriors are kind of closer to a, like the 500 schedule, but like the Wolves take care of business. They're going to get themselves out of the play-in tournament.
It's also underrated that this is officially tanking season now.
Yep.
Like the games against Utah, they are right now 15 wins, so they are second best in lottery odds. We're going to see some egregious lineups get thrown out there.
If the Wolves want to win on the last night of the season against Utah, they will.
Yep. I mean, the other thing, the Pelicans, they're sitting there 18 wins. That puts them at the fourth best lottery odds.
And
we are going to see egregious rotations coming right out. And where, like,
and New Orleans is still playing their guys. New Orleans is still playing their guys, but like next week, are they going to?
Yeah.
Then no, they don't have a lot of guys because everyone else is hurt or traded. But like,
yep.
If New Orleans is playing Zion, like they have a puncher's chance of what they just beat the Clippers.
But like 76ers, Nets, 22 wins. They're five games back of a playoff spot. We're gonna see. This is the time of year where it's like you're not just playing a bad team, mm-hmm. you're playing a G League team. Like,
right.
You are not going to see like good NBA, like eight NBA, like rotation worthy players. You're going to see like three young guys, five guys that they want to look at for next year. And that's it. Everyone else is getting rest.
Yep. So, and the Spurs are.
These games should be bloodbaths.
The Spurs game on Sunday is a good example of that. Well, the Spurs aren't tanking necessarily, and the reason why they are not playing well is because Wemby is missing. But like, the Wolves lost to the Spurs earlier in the season in a game I don't think should have been, like, it's not a frustrating loss at that time in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they would have lost to them on Sunday, that would have been just a travesty. Like, they just don't, other than Fox, they don't have enough quality players. It's not even a slight to them. They're missing guys. And so, you said the same thing about Utah, maybe New Orleans, like the Brooklyn and Philly, they got two games against Brooklyn. Brooklyn could theoretically make the East play-in, not a high bar. And maybe not now. They're five games back.
Yeah, they're five games back. Like that's tough to make that.
And they're not incentivized to break that five game gap. So
they also traded to get their own picks back. So like
if that tells you
they're not looking to win games. Like these are gonna be games where the Wolves are gonna go out there and it's going to be like Cam Thomas, maybe Cam Johnson still. Everyone else is sitting. Like D'Lo is not gonna play. Like you're gonna get 40 minutes of Trendon Watford. Like it's just, this is the end of the NBA season when people are like, how can I get more ping pong balls in the lottery? Mm-hmm. Like it's just different. That's why like I confidently look at this schedule and I'm like, the Wolves can win 50 games still because the level of competition they're going to be playing. Jaden McDaniels could be the best player on the other team, like hands down, and he's our third option. Like,
Brooklyn fans are more interested in the top seeded Duke versus the 16 seed game than they are in their own games. The Cooper Flag highlights are.
Think of like the Wolves seasons like that. Like I remember going to my wife and I had before I got into the media side. Like we had season tickets for 8 years. Like there were games I would go to where I was like, all right, what I want to see out of this game is Andrew Wiggins score 18 points in the first three quarters. Then no one play the fourth quarter and they lose by five. Like that is the perfect Wolves game in March for me, is like, let's see what Wiggins can do. Let's see if there's progress. And then just start throwing in all of the bench guys. I want Greg Steensma out there, Lou Amundsen, like throw out all of the bottom of the barrel guys. Robbie Hummel needs to take 9 shots and let's lose by 5 and then I'll go home happy. And that's what all of these teams are looking at right now, of like, let's see 20 points from Keontae George in the first 20 minutes and then let's see him not play again.
Yeah. I remember watching Providence in the NCAA tournament, knowing that Chris Dunn was likely going to get taken by Tibbs in the draft. So it's kind of fun not to, it's certainly fun not to worry about, not watch the NCAA tournament with that in mind and just root for my Cyclones.
There you go.
All right. We're going to wrap it up here. Andrew, I know you're on a new pod. You want to plug it here?
Yeah, I partnered with the Daily Wolves. I'm sure listeners have seen their social media stuff out there. They've been around for probably like 7-8 years now putting out Wolves stuff. I partnered with them to do a postcast called Courtside. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube. We do live streams after games that goes on, I think it's on Twitter, YouTube, and I think we're looking to get on TikTok in the near future too, but irrelevant. We're just trying to make it a more fan focused, like post game experience where you can come in, ask questions, interact, like have a good time. The other thing I do want to plug for them is they do have watch parties every Friday and Saturday if there's a Wolf game over at Headfire Brewing in Northeast, and they actually have their own beer coming out next week.
There you go.
Headfire is giving them their own custom short print beer. It's called Ant's Secret Stuff, a hazy IPA from what I hear. So if you're looking for a new beer, if you're looking for a cool place to watch the game, like Headflyers, awesome. I also think we're recording this on the 13th. I also think John Krasinski's getting his own beer tonight, actually. So all the more reason to go to Headflyer. Go support John Krasinski too. He's a dope guy.
Yeah, go try the two Wolves beers and just whoever's beer you dislike most, just flame them about it. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But certainly, yeah, go out to Headflyer. I've been out there a couple times for John's pods, fun times. And so to have another Wolves person affiliated with them out there, that sounds great. And check out the Wolves Daily Pod. That's a friend of two words. So yeah, I'm glad you're partnering up with them.
Yeah, and Ryan will be on that pod at some point where we grill him with fan questions that he has to answer. So that'll be fun.
Yes, please tell me all the things I all the dumb opinions I have on this pod. Go tell me that over there.
Awesome. All thanks, right. Ryan.
Yep. Thanks for everyone for listening. Go Wolves.
Ayoo!